And you are listening to a special edition of This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio and affiliate networks. This episode is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the innovation impulse from idea to business model and emerging best practices. Follow us on the web via www.healthinnovationmedia.com. Welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the creator, producer, and co-host of the show. And joining me in the virtual studio is my colleague and co-host, Douglas Goldstein, also known on Twitter as @eFuturist. Doug is a published author with seminal titles focused on the emerging e-health economy for quite some time, and a noted keynote speaker at many popular healthcare conferences, as well as my partner, as we interview industry thought leaders, entrepreneurs, and those aspiring to make a difference in the lives of the American people, if not the world at large. So we had a minor technical challenge on the front end of this broadcast, so without further delay, let's join up with the original audio.
We're real nimble here. We just finished the 15th annual Population Health Colloquium that's organized by Dr. David Nash, who's the founding and current dean of the Jefferson School of Population Health, with the generous sponsorship of the likes of Humana, Sage Health, Growth Health Partners, and several others, Accenture and so forth. And we're both sort of, our heads are spinning because it was an incredible conference, some awesome keynote with plenary speeches by noted leaders in the industry, as well as some incredible breakout sessions with top talent pretty much across the board. And the sort of context on the Population Health Colloquium is it's a gathering focusing on the emerging specialty science, if you will, of population health, which it notes is transforming healthcare. Population Health is dedicated to creating a fundamentally different culture and perspective focusing on wellness, a paradigm shift that leads to changing health choices both at a conscious and unconscious level for care providers, payers, and consumers. We've made great strides in recent years moving toward a society that focuses on wellness and prevention, but we have a long way to go. So, Doug, let me ask you, your key takeaways from the session. Have we made progress towards this population health frame of reference from a culture and operational perspective? Give us your insight.
Well, the answer is yes. There's been significant progress made, particularly with the federal government outlining key targets in terms of the move to value-based reimbursement based on outcomes as opposed to just services delivered. So between that dynamic and the fact that we have deployed electronic health records in many provider and health systems across the country. And most importantly, we have the people we serve, the citizens, walking around with mobile devices that allow them to talk to a doctor anywhere, anytime, or interact digitally through various service apps, whether it's getting an appointment or getting some triage through the mobile device. So we have three key elements that are in place now that were not in place 15 years ago.
So this might be considered the enabling, the drivers, and why this time it could be different from perhaps back in the 90s when we were first visiting this managed care population health frame of reference?
Absolutely. The 90s was just a foreshadowing, and everybody recognizes that, number one, people feel better when they're healthy. And number two, there are not the dollars to sustain the kind of growth in healthcare. And frankly, as a citizen, a person who's sometimes a patient, healthcare, medical care is a periodic unwanted purchase. And I am motivated to avoid those things whenever possible. So I'm watching what I eat. I'm exercising more. And I think that there's tens, hundreds of millions of people doing that across the country.
And, you know, we had some amazing keynotes, and I just jotted down some of the sound bites. For instance, Jeff Arnold, former founder, CEO of WebMD, now leading the Share Care enterprise, was up talking about AskMD and RealAge acquisition and what it means for their entree into consumer health. And Jeff Arnold basically went in and said, we're all in on mobile. If I were you, I'd bet the farm. Is he making a mistake?
Absolutely not. We're re-engineering as a citizen. I'm re-engineering my life through mobile devices. They're compelling, addictive, whether for entertainment or fitness, health, or healthcare reasons. So we're re-engineering how we manage our lives through these devices. So he is absolutely right on that. But the other thing that Jeff said that I think is even more important is the effort to create this concept of living green. So how do we spread, you know, we know that this concept of social impact, we're tribal animals, we're connected. So just as smoking goes viral, fewer people smoke, then fewer people smoke. So more people getting fit, exercising, eating smarter, that has a viral effect through the entire economy. So he's got a Living Green initiative. There's a Blue Zone initiative. There's a Wellville initiative. So there's multiple initiatives across the country to create these zones of health where people actually live longer because of the nature of the people around them and healthier behaviors. So we have these places of the future that exist today that will be growing over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, so let me ask you this. I mean, if he's all in, doubling down, if you will, on mobile, does that leave grandma out of the picture?
Absolutely not. Ultimately, mobile phones deliver a voice. So that's not going away. So, but there is this concept of appropriate technology. So people have to think about what's the appropriate technology for a particular group of people. And it doesn't have to be grandma. It can be me. It can be my kids who prefer to get information through voice. Or, you know, so I think that the real concept that we have to embrace is appropriate technology based on the preferences of the people we're communicating with.
So it could be as simple as a text message?
Could be as simple as a text message, or it could be as simple as my doctor's voice being recorded to remind me to take my meds. So there's some very creative, appropriate solutions. So all solutions are not high tech. Some are very low tech. And frankly, texting, 90% of the people respond to the text messages very clearly. So, and that is something that is almost universal. So mobile includes my mom, your mom, their grandparents, and basically anybody.
And of course, I've heard you speak quite a bit about the relationship of big data to improving health outcomes. How do the two of those cross up?
Well, so we have a set of emerging technologies, mobile, social media, gamification, behavioral economics, and big data. So big data is really a term that we've had big data ever since we've had credit cards. There's been bigger and bigger data sets created on purchasing behaviors that many consumer product companies have leveraged. But now we have multiple health data sets that are being integrated and mined to get observations on how people prefer to be interacted with. And now we have certain leaders, whether it's BayCare in Florida or Primera in California, that are developing comprehensive, you know, data sets, merging fitness, health, healthcare, and consumer products data so they really understand me as a person and things that are important in my life, not just my medical claims profile.
So let's pivot to the huge pieces on this chessboard of transformation. One of the huge players in many, many ways is the academic health center, our medical schools. And we were privileged to listen in on a keynote by Stephen K. Klasko, who is the president and chief executive officer of Thomas Jefferson University and the Jefferson Health System. And he's got a book out there and talked about, the quote of his talk was, "How I Messed Up Healthcare in America, Put Your Name Here." And basically, he didn't say this, but I'll summarize what I heard him say, which is, stop whining and lead. And the bottom line there is everyone's pointing the finger at everyone else. And this is the first man, it seems, at the high visible institutional level saying, wait a second, I'm the problem, but you know what? I'm also the solution. So they've made some pretty big moves there in leveling the playing field from a parity perspective between an academic institution and a fairly large nonprofit community health system. What was your sense of his message?
Well, it's more than his message. It's the actions they're taking. So they are disrupting the traditional healthcare model. It's best exemplified by their announced merger with Abington, a community health system. Oh, you know, the natural reaction would be they're going to a hub and spoke. So the community hospitals be the feeder into that system. And that's exactly what is not happening. So it's a merger of equals. They have 11 people from each organization on a board and two independents. But more importantly, he called it a hub to hub approach. And his concept is extensivist exporting clinical care teams and knowledge and support to basically support the community hospitals, doctors, but most importantly, the people they serve in their own homes or anywhere they might be. So they're leveraging every aspect of technology, whether we call it telemedicine, telehealth, e-health, asynchronous telemedicine, synchronous telemedicine. They're leveraging all that to save people time in travel, time in expense, and really extending out the expertise of Jefferson to wherever the customers might be. So I think that is a disruptive approach to reinventing this approach to what, quote, we've seen as university academic medical centers.
As someone who actually sat in the seat of a senior position in a major academic medical center, I can say they're not the most nimble entities to transform. But on the one hand, when you think about their role in education and research and discovery, you really have to think, why shouldn't they be at the tip of the spear of this change? And more often than not, they aren't, even though more and more are identifying chief innovation officers. So we shall see where we go with that. Let's pivot to a minute for
I want to comment on that before we pivot, because I think there's a really unique blending of, quote, population, public health, and basic research going on in these centers. And much innovation is found on the periphery and the edges. So if we overlap these applied approaches to public health and population health with basic research in genomics, et cetera, I think the exciting discoveries could come out of organizations like Jefferson because of the overlay of the research with the practical applied approach happening in public and population health initiatives. So that's my two cents on that. I think we're going to see some big innovations coming out of that.
And I might say that a bit of news that was made at the colloquium was their Hearst Health Prize, which was created in partnership with Jefferson School of Population Health and Hearst Health. Follow them on Twitter, at Hearst Health, which is a $100,000 gift prize, cash award given in recognition of an organization or individual's outstanding achievement in managing or improving wellness. So they're really out there with a poke and a prod and a carrot here to try and innovate our way into this new model of what I call the fusion of public health principles with acute care medicine.
All I can say is right on to that.
Right on, right on. So let's pivot. I want to talk about this amazing panel they had, the synergy between population health and the medical home, which should be noted that was, at least for the first day, there was their current plenary sessions. They're two separate events, but they combined on the opening day. And our good friend, colleague, Fred Goldstein, who is founder and CEO of Accountable Health, chaired a panel with some pretty top talent, including Roy Beveridge, MD, Chief Medical Officer at Humana, and one of my absolute favorite people of all time, Rashika Fernandopoli, who's the founder and CEO of Iora Health. You talk about a disruption company. Thomas Graff, also Chief Medical Officer at Pop Health at Geisinger. Leslie Kelly Hall, Senior VP at HealthWise. And they had an amazing. Now, we talked a little bit about this, and my probe to you was this, especially when I heard Humana is, or excuse me, I heard Rashika mention that Iora Health is working with Humana. And the thing that popped up to me, which I tweeted, I think not verbatim, but I basically said, wait a second, Iora Health disruptor of disintermediation is now working with intermediator Humana. What gives? You had a different take on that. Is there risk here, or does this make sense?
Well, I think it makes sense because we have some of these major intermediaries recognizing that if they're not disrupting and innovating, that they'll be left behind. So I think that's true across Aetna, United, Humana, and they're all taking a little bit different approaches, but they recognize that they have to help invent the future, not just ride the cash cow.
Well, for those who may not be tracking with the context here, I mean, this Iora Health is a direct practice. Some call it retainer medicine. Some even call it concierge, although it isn't concierge. But it's, in essence, an exit from the traditional medical practice, which does billing and collections. In the Iora or direct practice model, they're basically going back to the roots of an HMO, providing comprehensive primary care services for a fixed fee. And they've pretty much stayed out of the insurance billing side. But I think what I asked Rashika afterwards, I said, wait a second, how do these two worlds merge? I mean, how are you going to get into this? Well, we're doing it primarily for the Medicare patient, and we believe Humana is a good partner there because they can step up and provide infrastructure and the kind of support that we need to sort of have be present in that market. Then it started to make sense to me, but I'm not sure whether any kind of extraction model, which I'm calling direct practice, which I think is a rational response to an irrational market, but the direct practice, to the extent it sucks primary care capacity out of the general marketplace in terms of primary care services, to me that's a perfect storm given the Affordable Care Act.
Well, I think we don't have enough primary care doctors, and we're going to have, you know, extenders in the form of triage apps and services, whether it's things such as Zipnosis or Cognito, extending the capabilities of doctors, Watson. We have many things augmenting and extending doctors or nurse practitioners' capabilities virtually. That's going to continue. So I think we have to find a better way to pay primary care doctors for the value they deliver, because they've been underpaid in the traditional service. So it has to be disrupted. And making a better living, more fulfilling, both money and work-wise for primary care doctors, well, is probably the best thing to do to attract more doctors to that field.
So another presentation I was impressed by was Chris Kay, Senior Vice President, Chief Innovation Officer at Humana, which is perhaps one of the absolutely more innovative health plans out there. And, you know, I think his big take, you know, the soundbite takeaway I have from that was it ain't about transactions, it's about relationships, and we're here investing in relationships. Is that sort of rhetoric, or do you think they're sincere?
I think they're sincere, and I think many other health plans are recognizing that at the senior level, that they have to build relationships, and that is, I don't think it's rhetoric. I think it's going to be hard for them to overcome the distrust that's been generated over decades, being seen as denial of payment, or not Humana in particular, but in, as a generalization, as somebody who pays claims or focused on transactions. It's not rhetoric, but it's going to be a long road for many of those organizations to demonstrate that. But, you know, you've had some personal experiences, I know, with your mom where you might want to elaborate on that, where they are, where you're seeing them walk the talk, and it's beyond rhetoric.
So that was a totally unscripted offer to Chris, because in truth, I'm somewhat of a caregiver to my 83-year-old mother, and I've been watching her over the last 7 to 9 years kind of have, she's not a frequent flyer, but she's doing her share of ER admits for TIAs and other suspicious types of conditions. And I think we heard that anytime there's a hospital, I mean, an ambulance service, it varies by market, but just calling 911 for a trip to the hospital, you start at $5,000 expense to the health plan of the third party. But at any rate, I had to volunteer this because I've been watching her cycle through Medicare Advantage plans. And the most recent one she elected in the last year was Humana. And with Humana, something was different. It's the very first time I've ever seen a health plan step up and say, hey, welcome to the plan. We want to come out and meet you. We want to get to know you, understand your situation and your living conditions, and we want to facilitate your access to needed medical service when and if necessary. And it just blew my mind because what they did was proactive case management. Call it, she's a target based on risk stratification. I don't care. They at least came out of, you know, the passive third-party payer relationship, and they got involved in her procurement of care. And from that point on, she's had a pretty good experience to date, so I felt compelled to share that.
Well, and I think that answers your own question about, at least in Humana, and I think it's happening across other plans that I know of, where they are seeking to shift and focus on relationships and not just transactions. So, you know, that's good news.
So we have just a few minutes left. Anything else top of mind from you you'd like to hear about? But let me tee up our Esther Dyson and some of her remarks on the way to Wellbuin. I know you touched on this, but her session was the way to Wellville. Don't rent your health, invest in it. How do you do that?
I think you have to do it one day at a time. So I think you've got to look inside and start with yourself and say, what are the things that I can do that are more healthy? And that's going to spread through your community. So I think that's the way it starts. And I think we see many people doing that with wearables and quantified self movement. And, you know, 70% of Americans do track something with related to their health. Now, only 21% today are using technology, but that number is growing. So I think it starts one person at a time and then into a community movement. And we're seeing that in a number of areas. And we're seeing people from the Blue Zones to Jeff Arnold to others, Living Green, Wellville, Esther Dyson's initiative, that are seeking to make it fun and make it the way to live by living healthy.
Simply say, check out the way to Wellville. It's at hiccup.co. Check out the challenge, the way to Wellville, five places, five metrics, 5 years. And they've really zeroed in on five towns, which they did exhaustive due diligence about. And they're trying to bring all the stakeholders, by the way, under 100,000 populations, so they can wrap their hands around this and really focus on everything from urban planning to nutrition, to education, to the availability of parks and recreation, and so on and so forth, swimming upstream. She said one thing that blew my mind. She says, you know, all you people in here are focused on hospital readmits. Well, you know what? How about readmissions to jail or prison? They're costly, too. So swimming up that sort of stream probably makes a lot of preventive health, preventive medicine sense, no?
Well, right, exactly. And the information and the research out of the Blue Zones project. So people in Blue Zones live 10 years longer on average. And that's a result of a diet, activity, community, social connectivity, a number of factors that are documented. That project seeking to replicate that in over 30 communities. Wellville's targeted five communities. Minneapolis, in Minnesota, there's the New Ulm community as part of the Minneapolis Heart Institute. And Alina, that has made significant progress in reducing hypertension and improving heart health. And the American Heart Association is also very active in looking at creating these cultures of health. So I think we're definitely making significant progress, and we're seeing that on the grocery shelves and in the purchasing behaviors of people and the shifts in products. So we got a long way to go, but I think we're getting a nice foundation in place.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, we're almost out of time, but there's just two others I want to mention. And by the way, we can't mention it all, as is the case. There's more there than you can actually participate in. We can't clone ourselves. But go to populationhealthcolloquium.com. And that colloquium is challenging for some. It's collouium.com. And check it out. There's great stuff there. And there will be a Population Health Colloquium 2016, which we hope to participate in as well. But Don McDaniel hit a home run. Present CEO of Sage Growth Partners, he really just drove into, you know, this, you know, David Nash talks about the canoes, the fee-for-service leg and the other leg and fee-for-value and how the sort of divergence is kind of a challenge to manage in. And he went into this industrializing healthcare, how transparency, efficiency, and markets will transform the industry. And I know this is this goes right to the private health, the private sector solution that you're most interested in. Do you have any thoughts about Don's presentation?
Well, certainly, it was insightful, recognizing that there's a lot of things we can do to incentivize that. And I mean, he did spend a fair amount of time talking about negative economic drivers that are causing problems, but he did nail it specifically in terms of this shift. Some people have called it consumerism. Other people have called it retailization of medicine. But it's an entirely different movement away, where doctors, hospitals are much more going direct to the citizen. So, no, I think that it was certainly strongly based on economics and outlined and put a lot of specifics into this whole area that has generally been called retailization and consumerism.
Yeah, he tried to get everyone's attention by forecasting the spend on Medicare and Medicaid by 2025, I think it was. The projection was Medicare would be a $1 trillion entitlement program, and the Medicaid spend is going to approach $800 billion. So, We've got work to do, as you said. So in our final moments here, let me pivot to the final session. I want to talk to you about someone you're familiar with, Dr. Jeffrey Rose, Senior Vice President of Clinical Strategy at Hearst Health. Topic was care guidance, vital information for healthcare's new model. And this guy really spoke to me, because having been in the bloodbath of the 80s and 90s, and the assumption of risk, and then the risk pushback, he really set the context for where we've been. And I think he used the phrase of, you know, this is deja vu all over again, you know. But what was some of your sensibilities about why he's optimistic now?
Well, I think it's some of the same things we kicked off with. There's certainly a movement. We're seeing big progress in teamwork and collaboration. Yeah, we have a lot of ways to go. But we're seeing stronger collaboration within and across organizations. And now there's a real focus on crossing the acute care barrier and linking social services and tying those together. So teamwork's making progress. There's been a lot of progress in improving quality through Six Sigma, Lean, other approaches. So I think there's, and certainly technology is enabling the delivery of the most appropriate, the right medical knowledge at the right time to the right person. So all those things are, aligning themselves. We have challenges about integrating it into existing processes, but he did talk about we live in an accidental health system that's been created, so we consciously have to re-engineer that system. And frankly, that system's going to be a continuum of care where the dominant entity should not be the health system.
Well, there you have it. Well said. My only question about all this, especially on the academic side, is how quick will the AAMC be to adopt this new paradigm, this new culture and vision of the future? So, Doug, I want to thank you for your time today. I know you, like me, kind of tired, but thank you for your support at the colloquium. And I encourage you to follow my co-host and partner here at Douglas Goldstein, eFuturist at eFuturist.net, and on Twitter at eFuturist. So that will have to be the last word for today's broadcast. I want to thank my colleague, Douglas Goldstein, for his time and insights today. And I also want to say a shout out to David Nash, Dr. David Nash over at the Jefferson School of Population Health, including Emily, Melissa, and Alexis. They were awesome helping us out, getting all those interviews done, and you will note that those interviews will be up in the not-too-distant future. So with That'll be it for today. This is Greg Masters saying thanks all and bye now.